In 2 Samuel 21 here, we've got this complex situation between Saul and the Gibeonites, and I'd title this little chat, Dealing with Complex Situations, because it really was. Okay, verse 2, the king called the Gibeonites and said to them, now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but of the remnant of the Amorites, and the children of Israel had sworn to them, and Saul sought to kill them in his zeal for the children of Israel and Judah. Now you remember Joshua 9, the Gibeonites had been promised security by Joshua, and although they were the Hivites who ought to have been destroyed, according to what they were told in Deuteronomy 7, they were allowed to not be destroyed and to remain in Israel, and it seems that they got themselves involved with serving the tabernacle. And yet Saul wanted to kill them, and he had killed a lot of them. Why did he do this? Well, he was trying to get hold of, say, one verse in the Bible. Say, we got to kill these guys. Let's go and kill them. He needed to punish the apostate, when in fact, grace, God's divinely sanctioned grace, had said, no, you're not to kill them. You are to allow them to remain. And he didn't want to know about grace. And you think likewise of how this guy Saul, who was so disobedient to God, who'd been absolutely disobedient to what Samuel had told him and had persecuted David, been such an awful man, as the Psalms bring out even clearer than the historical record, he had expelled all the witches from the borders of Israel, although he later goes to one at the end of his life. So you can see what's happening. It's what psychologists would call transference. He knew, subconsciously, that he was a sinner and deserved punishment for his sins. But instead of repenting and throwing himself upon God's grace, instead he goes around transferring that guilt onto other people, like witches and Gibeonites, and goes around persecuting them. Even though in the case of the Gibeonites, he should not have done this. God's judgment on it had been that by grace they should be accepted into Israel. This was deeply displeasing to God that he did this, and so there is now a famine upon the land, even after Saul is dead, because of what he did. And you think, well, why did all Israel have to suffer a famine because of what Saul did when he's dead and gone? And I think the idea was that they had seen all this, what was being done to the Gibeonites, and had not stood up for the Gibeonites. So that's why their sin of omission, the sin of silence, had to be punished by a famine. So David knows he's got to do something about it, and he goes to them in verse 3 and says, what shall I do for you? With what shall I make atonement, so that you may bless the inheritance of Yahweh? Now, in atonement here translates this word that means a covering. And the Gibeonites understand he's hinting at a financial payment, because they then say in verse 4, no, we don't want any silver and gold, but we want Saul's family put to death in Israel. Well, it was stated specifically, Numbers 35:31, under the law of Moses, that there was not to be the payment of money as compensation for murder. It was very clear. But David has seen to the spirit of the law, and he has seen beyond the letter of the law, quite rightly in many cases, although this is what led him, I think, to the sin of presumption with Bathsheba and killing Uriah. Anyway, so he thinks that he can sort of bend God's law on this and actually pay money in compensation for murder, although they're told in Numbers 35:31 they should not do this. And the Gibeonites say, no, you're not going to cover this over with your money. It's not for us to put any man to death in Israel. We don't have the right to do that, but you do. So we want blood. And then he says, verse 4, whatever you say, I'll do. Well, that is really foolish to say, yep, there's a blank check, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. There's a complex case, and I think David fails in dealing with it rightly. He starts off saying, yeah, well, let's just break God's law, let's offer some money. Can money be the answer to all things? No. All right. Well, look, I'll do whatever you tell me. Well, that's unwise. Well, they then say, verse 5, we want to see vengeance, basically, on the family of Saul. That's what they want. They want seven men of the sons of Saul to be delivered to us, and we will hang them up to Yahweh in Gibeah of Saul. So they wanted to really rub it in. They wanted to kill Saul's sons in his hometown and leave them hanging up there. Well, the idea is, I think, in Numbers 25, verse 4, where the bodies of the leaders of the apostasy, the idolatry, were hung up to turn away Yahweh's anger, and I think that is the idea. And yet, these seven sons of Saul were not necessarily personally responsible for his persecution of the Gibeonites. And David had also solemnly vowed before Yahweh, both to Saul and Jonathan, on at least two occasions, that he would not destroy their seed. So, he is in a total mess. He has got himself totally caught up with various promises he's made. And the records are designed, I think, often in the Bible to elicit from us the question, what should he have said? What could he have done? Well, I think that he should have simply said, look, I vowed a vow not to kill the seed of Saul, but I believe in grace. I can't allow this to happen. I don't know what the way out is. I will throw myself down before Yahweh and beg for this situation to be resolved another way. But pride stops him. It's like the sin with Bathsheba. I think, you know, it was an out-of-character failing of David, but I think that this fascinating little record here in 2 Samuel 21 is leading us to that point where we will say, well, what could David have done? He should have thrown himself down before God. This is what he does later when he's given the options to choose between as to the judgment that should come upon Israel because of, I guess, not paying the atonement money when he's numbered Israel and Judah. And he just says, look, I can't choose. I don't know what to choose. You choose, God. I don't know. It's beyond me. And I think maybe he does do that at that point because he's learnt from his mistake here. Now, of course, the lessons are don't make blanket promises. Be very circumspect in your use of language, not just making these blanket promises. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to do this. I shall never do that. Or, yeah, I'll do anything that you ask me. No. This is very much acting not only unwisely, but without due reference to divine principle. At the very best, he could say, well, look, what do you want me to do for you? And I will see if I can. But instead, he says, whatever you say, that I will do. Well, you know, that this is pride, I think. So many times we observe it in others, I suppose, more clearly, get ourselves in these kind of impossible situations, which I suppose God allows to happen, because he wants you to fall down before him and man and say, I don't know. I'm in a terrible strait, as he said to God later, when he was given those choices as to the consequences of his numbering Israel and Judah. But he doesn't do that. And so he does what I think you could say was probably wrong. He does kill the sons of Saul, and he promised not to, which was quite contrary to what he really stood for, because he had gone out of his way to show huge grace to the family of Saul. You remember how he says, is there anybody left of the family of Jonathan and Saul that I can show grace to? Yeah, he really was kind to them. This was against what he really wanted to do. But so often people end up doing that which is against their best principle and their own personal conviction, because they can't find the humility to just backtrack and say, yeah, look, I said that to you and I was wrong. And these little words, I was wrong, are so hard for us, aren't they? And you see here an example of what happens if you can't say those words. You end up breaking your own best principle. You end up hurting others. You end up doing what is wrong.